We're on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and this is the On the Record show for all of this week, because we're airing from the court reporting company of O'Brien Levine, and it's all about litigation this week and litigators throughout the Boston area, top litigators. And if I'm talking to litigators, I need my sidearm bandit, Mark Z from Mark Z Legal Staffing. Hi, Mark.
Jeff. Hi, great to be with you.
Thank you.
This is the premier attorney space. We're talking to the best litigators in Boston, and it's the playoffs, the Super Bowl, and March Madness all rolled into one.
Oh, my God. All this pressure. Too bad I don't feel pressure ever, unless I'm home. And our first guest, founding partner, Jonathan Friedman and Adam Shaffrin from Rudolph Friedman. Welcome, guys.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
And thanks for having us.
Good. And we're going to be talking about prevailing wage, 1099s, and contractors, a subject which I know is just seems that entrepreneurs I deal with just don't get.
Well, you know, that is the fastest growing area of litigation today, is the employment area, and in particular prevailing wage and wage and hour violations, including misclassification.
Wow. Why is it the fastest growing area? Because of what I said? Because people just don't know?
Well, what we see often in the growing economy with the new type of startups like Uber or Lyft, or you'll see all those types of new service types based economy, that their business model is based off of using 1099 independent contractors. But they create that business model without necessarily engaging in an analysis of whether the person that's performing the service for them is really an employee, and whether or not it's appropriate to treat them as an independent contractor.
One of the things business people have to realize is that in Massachusetts, like many other states, everybody is presumed to be an employee unless you can prove three elements that excise them and let them be treated as independent contractors. So you are always being classified as an employee unless you can prove your way out. And in today's modern economy, with people working from home and having different types of jobs than traditionally were in the past, people don't perform that analysis and end up having significant liability unintentionally. It's not a question of what you did, whether it was intentional or not. It's if you don't meet the requirements, then you are continually considered an employee.
So break that down for us, John, or Adam. Tell us what's the difference between an independent contractor and an employee under Massachusetts law?
So it's interesting you ask under Massachusetts law, because every state actually has its own set of laws that govern independent contractor misclassification. In Massachusetts, the state of Massachusetts generally looks at three factors. The first factor is what every state in the country actually looks at, and that's control. What is the level of control that the employer or the company is exercising over the work that the individual is performing? So the greater the level of control, for example, does the individual have to wear a uniform? Do they have to report to work at certain particular hours? Is the way they perform their work, are those things controlled? And if the company is exercising a level of control that includes a variety of those factors, that causes the individual to be deemed an employee.
But what about if somebody's a franchisee, so, or a licensee, in terms of, say, an Uber, say another?
Uber thinks that they're a software company and they're selling software to independent contractors, which is very different than, let's say, a law firm, an accounting firm, a public relations firm. But your definition, Adam?
Well,
by that definition, both Mark and I are employees at home, and our wife should be putting us on payroll.
Well, and that's only the first element. Remember, if you don't meet all three of these elements,
right,
you are not an independent contractor. It's not that you only need to meet one of them, but you have to get free of all three. And your question about the franchise situation, this is Massachusetts law. This applies to anybody employed in Massachusetts, irrespective of where the business is from.
Okay.
So a Delaware corporation that is housed in Houston, Texas, but has people here in Massachusetts, those people in Massachusetts are subject to Massachusetts law, even though the Houston employees are subject to Texas law and the Delaware employees are subject to Delaware law. So this company could be dealing with three completely different sets of requirements for the people performing the same tasks.
I think the thing that I try to talk to my clients about the most are the consequences, because they're quite harsh, aren't they?
very significant. It's not just the tax implications for the individuals, but if it becomes a misclassification, it is then a wage and hour violation in Massachusetts, again, without fault, automatic treble damages, and an award of attorney's fees against you. So you mess up for a dollar, and you're looking at $3 plus the attorney's fees on top of that, and it grows very, very quickly.
So examining the landscape in terms of different businesses, our listeners out there are different types of businesses. What businesses do you think these classifications affect the greatest?
So a lot of the industries that we see this type of misclassification occur in really comes across two industries. The first is the industries that we were just mentioning, is these new economy type startups. They obviously, as you guys were mentioning, consider themselves, for example, Uber, to be a software company that provides software to independent drivers. The flip side, a driver would say, no, Uber, you're a cab company, and I'm a cab driver. And that's the question that's getting resolved really in almost every state in the country right now under their various laws. But other areas and industries that we tend to see independent contractor misclassification very frequently is in the construction industry. A lot of blue-collar workers we'll see quite frequently, I don't know if it's appropriate to say get taken advantage of, but we do see in the construction industry, which also raises other issues, such as the company's wage obligations to its employees. But I'd say the three biggest industries where we see it is in the new economy with startups, with the construction industry, and actually in distribution systems. So companies that use independent contractors to distribute and sell their products is a rising area of independent contractor misclassification.
One of the big problems you also see, and Adam alluded to this, is with startups. Because oftentimes they're so strapped for cash that you're bringing in people to perform services for you, but they really are within your business line. And so you bring somebody in to help you generate more business, and you don't really have the ability to have a full-time employee at that point, and you end up finding out that this person you brought in, because it's within your business line, is technically an employee. So it really is something that people starting up, particularly in the new economy, really need to be careful about.
You know what we're finding in my business, which is the legal business and working with attorneys, you're having a lot of startups, as you say, but also it's segmentized. So you have businesses that are that have laid off maybe when you have an aged population. So have laid off people, and a lot of people, for example, we just had a situation, a controller of a major law firm. That person has decided they can't get a job, so they're going out and working at four or five law firms. Well, they have a business, which is consulting, but a lot of times they go in and they're under the control of the particular firm for that day. So does it really seep into the professional world too? We're finding also, even with law firms, with partners, a lot of partners at law firms are 1099s.
It can seep in anywhere. Again, Massachusetts law is extremely pervasive. It's very easy to violate. And there are very severe consequences for violation, because if you don't meet any one of the three criteria, you've violated the law.
That's pretty strict. It's like a trip line.
Well, it really is, and that's why you see a lot of test cases in Massachusetts. You see them in California, which has a similar setup. You see them in Illinois, which has a similar setup. So the bounds of employment law are being tested every day. I know. For our firm, we have multiple cases going now in the distribution area in each of those three jurisdictions because of the nature of the law in each of those three jurisdictions. And you're going to see more of it as the new economy is tested with laws that maybe are outdated for the new economy.
You know, I hadn't thought about distribution. It's an interesting segment of the three. I know about the startups. I know about construction because they're basically the ones who lobbied in Massachusetts to make the law stricter, from my experience. But I also add the fourth, and that is service industry. I see a lot of it in the service industry, the small boutique places that are subcontracting out projects as they're growing up and down, and they don't even know that it exists, the law.
Yeah, that is a significant risk for them, and I think it's very similar to startup companies that need assistance in a particular area, whether it's a, you know, they need accounting services or they need a president who is going to be part of their business but only comes in 2 or 3 days a week because they can't afford a president for themselves. These are very significant issues for them.
I think the underlying thing, and I think you're getting to, because for our listeners, is that companies are putting themselves into a very vulnerable position, correct?
Well, what we like to advise companies in, as we talk about startups particularly, is what the worst thing a company can do is entrench themselves in a business model that is creating a legal violation. And that's why we recommend,
that's
particularly
good.
And from startups, is that they engage and make that analysis from the outset.
Smart.
Because the worst thing that can happen is your business is predicated on a model that is not sustainable under the laws of Massachusetts or any other state. So we do recommend the companies make that analysis from the outset.
Great point.
And when they make the analysis, it's got to be a holistic approach. It's not just the lawyer that meets with them. It's also their accountant and the business people. And it's important that a business person understand the interaction with their counsel and their tax accountant, because you want to make sure that you're structured properly for protection areas, but also you want to make sure that you're structured properly from wage and hour standpoint, and then you want to still have a working business model.
What I was going to, just to follow up, I mean, one of the things I know that you do, instead of just litigating cases, you do the planning to make sure these things don't happen.
Well, yes, we represent both businesses and as employers and individuals as employees or independent contractors, and we're lucky that we're in that situation because we get to see it from both sides. So we see what the risks are, we see the ways that you can cure the risks, and we like to, when we're representing employers, make it a prophylactic approach so they don't end up getting hurt. That's the best piece of litigation you can have when you're representing the company, is when you never have it at all because you've planned.
Well, you know, my last question, it's just, and maybe it's not the right question, I'm thinking about the accounting firms. If I were one of these companies that was hiring contractor, wouldn't my accountant see that when they were doing my taxes?
That's not really the role of an accountant, and I'm not sure that every accountant understands the three-prong test and knows what to be looking for. Certainly, if you're with a very sophisticated accounting firm and you're having a true audit done, as opposed to just a review or perhaps a compilation, that's true. They may spot the issue,
right.
But they may not be in tune with that issue, since that's really not the direction that they're looking at things from.
I just want to piggyback, Jeff, are the public policy implications, because I think it's the state and the government want some money, and so that's why they're setting this up and making it a little tighter.
There are a couple of public policy provisions there. They certainly do want to get the tax revenues from employees. They also want to make sure that people are covered by things like workman's comp or other appropriate insurance that many independent contractors may not have. And so there are a number of public policy considerations for what the law is. I'm not trying to say the law is bad in any way. It serves a very good purpose, particularly for those that would not be otherwise represented and protected. But you're right, there are a number of governmental interests that are at play here to protect people, to make sure that they're properly compensated, to make sure that they're properly insured should something happen to them. And that's the rationale behind it.
Right. Great topic, and I think very important to entrepreneurs, so I'm glad you've been on the show today, and this is, I think, your first visit to the show. We hope you come back again.
Be glad to.
Jonathan or Adam, if someone wants to find you, yourselves, or the firm, Rudolph Friedman, how would they do that?
Just look at RF Lawyers in Boston. It's rflawyers.com is our tag. Just look us up. We're online.
And your phone number?
617-723-7700. Ask for Adam.